Hey, and welcome to another edition of Amana Podcast. Amana is a collective of people, places, things, and actions that transcend us. And exploring your higher virtues, looking at what takes you off track and what tools and techniques do you use to get back on. And funnily enough, today I have my brother on the line, Chris Harradine. Say good day, Chris.
Hey, mate. How are you?
I'm good. Can hear you loud and clear, even though we're, 45 minutes apart or an hour?
Yeah.
So this will be an interesting ride. We haven't done any prep, well, not that I ever do prep, but why don't we start out with what you care about? You can do professional or personal, or it may come, it may intertwine. What are your values? What are your virtues and what do you live towards?
Yeah. Good question. Complex sometimes with our family. But with what I care about, my virtues is really caring for people, especially my family. And then that has over the years transcended into my work. Primarily been a tennis coach, whether it's been at colleges or country clubs, junior players, and been doing that pretty much my whole adult life. And it has shown me that over the years it can translate into great relationships after the fact of coaching people, can help people, move forward in their life. So it kind of has turned into not so much teaching tennis, but using that as a vehicle to help people move forward into things they want to do, whether it is getting better at tennis or more of a balance in life or getting into that high school team or the college team, going overseas and traveling and playing around the world, whether it's recreational or professional. So, it really has given me that tool to, I care a lot about my students, whether you're 85 years of age or 5 years of age. I want to be out there helping you succeed, in a skill that gives you definitely a little more confidence in life. And I think I like seeing that in my work, and I try to put that into my family as well, whether, we're on a tennis court or a pickleball court or a golf course, sharing those tools that I've gotten over the years, thanks to our parents getting us into tennis. It has been a great vehicle for me to, and you to share those things with people.
So when you, what's your earliest memory of tennis?
Oh man. It was either watching you, mum, or dad. It's probably mum. I tried to tell people, how did our family come together? And I said, basically, we're like an American football family. We go all of our vacations, holidays, were all about tennis and tennis tournaments. And so I think my earliest was probably mum playing midweek, which is a ladies league in Australia that used to be very competitive, sitting behind, the tennis court, playing in the dirt. And then she used to play on clay courts, and they would have sprinklers go on between sets to keep the clay damp. And I'd be running around in that dirty water in the summertime. So that's probably my first memory.
And then obviously, we have mentors along the way, right? And why don't you mention some of the coaches that you were fortunate enough to work with and some of the learnings they gave to you?
Yeah. So, mum and dad grew up playing tennis, but it was more of a recreational thing. And I think they saw they wanted to take that a little further with you and me. And I give them kudos for this. They've always found the best coaches in our area. And, your first coach, Chris, was a great guy who was one of the leading coaches in Sydney. But my first coach was my dad, but I wanted to be with your coach because whatever you did, I had to do. and you'd be getting your lessons while I'm climbing in the tree and hanging out with mum. And I'd want to be on the court. And so he didn't coach kids at my age. And I think mum begged him enough where he'd give me a shot. And she said, well, you've got your shot with Chris, but you got to tell your dad that you don't want to do lessons with him anymore. So I had to fire dad as my first coach. I still remember it.
Very oh my gosh, I don't remember any of that.
And then I got to work with your coach, and that was great. He had a court in his backyard, and then you moved on to another coach, Brad Miners, who to me was probably the most educating coach I've ever been a part of. It was so beyond tennis. That's to me, I didn't have him for long. I had him a couple of years, but he gave us the tools to all the fundamentals, all the history of the sport, why the sport exists, from who invented the Eastern grip, Bill Tilden, still remember it. you know, from shadow drills with on our Walkmans, putting in all the shots that you hit in the backyard with no tennis ball or tennis court. You know, he really gave us that education that to me gave me more love for the sport. And then he moved away, and then one of my coaches no longer with us now is Harry Baines, who's a good friend of your friend Brett Lucas. He's his grandfather.
Yeah.
And I had him for most of my teenage years, and what he taught me was, and I didn't think I was learning much at the time, but it was repetition. He gave me 30 minutes a week. That's all he'd give me. He'd give me no more, no less. And once I did that repetition for 30 minutes, he'd be like, all right, now go put in the work and go train, go play, go do your thing. And I didn't understand it being that young, but he really gave me those tools of repetition out there. And I think I thank him for that. You know, it was very different from the other coaches. And then, you know, I joined a group around 16 with Ross Anton in Sydney, and he gave me he was under Brad Miners as well as a student, and he became a coach and gave me the tools to work really hard out there. Put in the hours off the court, cross training, be the first to be there at a tournament at 5 a.m. working out, doing things. And he was also a soccer coach, so we used to all travel as a team, and that brought a lot of fun to the game. As you know, it's very lonely out there. So you know, that they were my coaches growing up, and they were all so different. But I remember all of them very clearly, of giving me something different to, you know, to bring out into my tennis game.
And did you have a highlight in your junior career?
Yeah, I think 12, 13, 14 was rough for me. I was a small kid. I had power, but didn't have consistency, didn't have a big serve. And then, you know, started moving up the ranks when I was 15. And then, you know, at 15, I had a breakthrough at a tournament called Manly Seaside. And it was day after Christmas every year. And it was back then, it was the lead up tournament. Well, back in the 70s, it was the lead up tournament to the Australian Open. So all the top players in Australia would always play that tournament. And, you know, then it turned more of an amateur thing with prize money. But I broke through and won the under 16s, one of my first 16s tournament. And, you know, what I thought was really great about it, because it was Christmas time, the whole family's in town. So, you know, you were there always cheering me on. And, you know, and one of your mentors, Steve Ferrick, that helped me on the mental side of things, he would always show up, and mum and dad would always be there. So I think that was, and I went on to win about three more junior titles there. I think in the juniors, that was probably some of the bigger tournaments that I won. We didn't always get to travel. So, you know, when the big tournaments came to town, that, you know, that's when you wanted to play them. And yeah, so I think that was definitely a highlight, but I felt that support from family and friends around me and that community, which, you know, I love in tennis. Like I said, it can be lonely out there. So it was definitely a highlight on and off the court for that.
And then at a certain point, you obviously have chosen to, you know, move to the United States. And tell us about some of that, what that journey entailed for you.
Yeah, well, once again, trying to follow you around, I followed you across the planet. you know, you came over to go to college here, and you know, we in Australia back then, we didn't know much about sport in college. And ironically, end up being a college coach at one point. I came over. Where it really all began was our connection to Pepperdine University in Malibu.
Yeah.
You know, you had the Aussie guys there and a few friends that introduced you to the coaches and the players. And I think you got a real connection with the place, and you got me a job there as a camp counselor. At the same time, I'm still trying to play tennis. So it got me over here to have a job and play some tennis tournaments. And that's where it really all began. I remember you driving me up PCH, and I'm seeing this campus, and I just never seen anything like it. And you know, we have a few schools like that in Australia, but nothing that caliber and sport facilities, and you know, and I just didn't understand what this place was about. It was just breathtaking, and I was drawn to it. Got to know some of the coaches. They put me in touch with some college coaches. And so I started shifting paths of wanting to be a professional tennis player and more going into starting with college and see how it goes. And, you know, but Pepperdine has given you, especially me, a real home. I tell people since I got there 20 years ago, I think my reunion was 20 years ago since I...
Wow.
That's amazing. Got there 2001, right before 9/11 hit. It was being here was pretty cool to come back full circle. And years later, I ended up working there, and it was such a great place there that, you know, I really grew up there in my adult life. And yes. You know, I think that's a pretty cool place to grow up. And, you know, I met my wife there, and, you know, her kids got to grow up around the teams and that environment, the camps. I still think that camp's the best camp in the country, from location to the way they run it, to the environment, climate. And, you know, it was great to be a part of it. And I still go and cheer on the teams, and I stay in contact with all the coaches. And so that's, you know, really got me sparking on wanting to be over here in America. I went, I think, about 5 years of no winters back and forth to Australia, played a little bit of college tennis, and, you know, had some good results in that. And
talk about that a little bit. What,
yeah,
your college coach and just some of those results and what that was like.
So, like I said, we didn't know much about college tennis. And I was already a year out of high school, and you know, to go to Division One, you need to, I think now it's 6 months, but we tried to look into that. I didn't qualify, so we went the route of where you went, was Ventura College, a community college in Ventura County, and met up with your old coach Nelson, who we love dearly still, and I still stay in contact with him. And he's such a character and cares so much. Again, I think he's one of those coaches that care about people, you know, whether he's coaching a five-year-old or, you know, anyone on his teams, he really cares about helping people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I took to him, and we had a great team and a great season. And I had some highlights there, and I won the Triple Crown in doubles, which had never happened. That's winning the Ojai tournament, which is probably one of the oldest tournaments in the country. And I won conference and I won state. Close with singles, you know, I think I ended up number one in doubles and in the state and fifth in singles. Mm-hmm. So had some good results there and wanted to see how my career went with playing a little more professional. So I went back to Australia for a while and you actually ended up coaching me because you were back in Australia at the time. But I think we maybe don't need to go into detail on how that went, but we had some fun, but we also, you know, a little brotherly, too much brotherly love on the tennis court. The passion came out.
But, it was a fun time. We joined White City, which is a lawn tennis club, and I got to impart a lot of the training that I disciplined myself with, and all the coaches that I've been fortunate to work with,
I do remember that time pretty vividly. I hadn't got to spend much adult time with you, as you know, you left when, you know, I think I was probably 13 to go to America. So we really didn't have much time together, except when you come back for summer times and things like that. So being in the same country at the same time as adults, I think it was great. And you started going on that journey of mental coaching, which, you know, gave me some good tools to help myself and my students. And so it was a great time to spend that good amount of time with each other, for sure.
And you've mentored some players through in your coaching career too, and one in particular that comes to mind would be young Gavin. And why don't you share a little bit about that, his journey and your journey with him, because it really is these things. You know, any tennis player knows that the people who are around you and close, you're in close proximity all the time. You're seeing each other every day for hours on end. You're traveling together. You're a part of each other's lives in so many ways. So you have had a great journey with Gavin. So share a little bit about that.
Yeah. So Gavin was my first top junior in Australia. So I moved back to Australia for a while and kind of quit tennis, didn't really want to do anything with it. And so I was doing another job out of tennis, and a friend of mine said, "Hey, can you teach a few lessons this week for me? I'm out of town." Yeah, absolutely. So taught a few lessons, and I met this kid. I think he was 13 or 14. He was the size of, I think he was already 6 foot nearly. So he was a big boy. And, we got chatting, and he said, dad asked me if I would hit some tennis balls with him. I said, sure. And we got hitting and chatting. And I do believe taking on anyone, again, whether it's recreational, professional, it's such a, to me, there's an interview process that happens organically, that if you guys are a match. And
yes,
I had many kids, you know, they see, parents see me do things with some kids that are working really well and they want in, and it doesn't always click. And I think I think you go through that too with some of your students with the mental coaching. And, we just click straight away. He understood me, I understood him, and his dad, same thing. They really loved, and I just came back from America. So I had all these tools that I would bring to the table there. They just hadn't seen in that traditional style of coaching that we had back in Australia. I think it's adapted now, but I kind of brought that to the table, and, I think he was really enjoying that. And we tried it out for a while, and me as a coach, and it went really well. He started getting in shape. Like I said, he was a tall, big kid, and he started putting in the hours off the court. And, I always say, if you want to be a good player, that student has to be the bus driver, and, we're just along for the ride, but they have to steer and lead the team. And And he was, you know, I'd be teaching other kids and he'd be on the side of the court doing sprints in the field and, you know, all the workouts I'd give him. And so he really put in the hours and I said, okay, let's give this a shot. And he got to be one of the top juniors in the country, traditional serving volleyer. I don't think I ever helped him on his volley. He had just great hands and gave him some of the other weapons he needed. And he became a top player. Then I moved back to America. He went on with another great coach in Sydney, John Thompson, who brought Gavin over to Nukes Academy in Texas and showed him that world and started showing him some of the college world at Texas A&M and different things like that. And then he, I came back to Australia. I saw him. He was nearly 12 months out of high school as well. And I said, what are you going to do? Do you want to go pro? You want to, you know, go to college? He goes, I think I want to go pro. I said, well, if you can beat me in a set right now, you get to go pro. Otherwise, you got to go to college. And I was up on him. I think it was like 4-1 or something like that. And I was coaching the Pepperdine team at the time. So I was in pretty good shape, hitting the ball well. And I go, you got a couple of days to decide. So he called me and said, okay, I want to go to college. So we got him a full scholarship at St. Mary's College up in San Francisco. He had a pretty good career up there, really top doubles player. Went on to get his master's degree at St. Mary's. And now he is over in Baltimore at one of the platinum clubs, running all the racket sports from squash to tennis, pickleball. And I was the best man at his wedding. We kind of became brothers. And, you know, that was a fun journey. I don't think that happens too often. And it's great to see him. He's got a young family now. And, you know, it's great to see him succeed. I was just over in Baltimore helping him out, setting up this job. So we've stayed connected more than half his life, we figured out the other day. So it's been pretty cool to see that journey. But it's, you know, I've had a few students that have done well, but, you know, I got to see him succeed outside of the tennis court, but it did start inside the tennis court, which was pretty cool.
Yeah. And so with coaching, you know, coaching is an interesting gig, right? Because it's not an easy living, even though it may, from the outside in, you go, oh, you're a tennis pro, but standing in the hot sun for, you know, 6 to 8 hours a day and putting a lot of energy and effort in takes a lot out of someone. And sometimes it can be quite active and other times it can be quite stiff or stoic. I consider that you've become a real master coach. There's no certification that's needed for something like that. And I've met a few in my time. I've always given kudos to Grant Doyle because of his tennis wisdom, you know, as a coach. And I've worked with some other coaches on the tour that are pretty masterful. And that's, you know, it's at different levels, right? But, I mean, you as a taken on tennis directing roles in your career, yep, you know, have had to not just coach but navigate a country club or a club, the politics that can show up in all of that, the economics, that pressures that need to be managed, and creating a great atmosphere. As a coach, though, what would you advise or share with someone who wanted to be a tennis coach?
Probably go into psychology in college, and more like our dad went into, and you, to help everyone. But you know, that's definitely, again, whether you're teaching a housewife or a kid, you know, I think that is such a huge advantage to have some type of background in, even if you just took a class on human behavior. I think that is definitely something that you can help them with, not just their forehand. But I got some advice off someone when I first moved back permanently to LA, and they said, Do you want to be a tennis coach when you're 65, leathery skin, you know, been in the sun your whole life, can barely walk, and you're just standing there teaching, you know, out of the basket, you know, or do you want to do things in tennis off the court that can bring you, you know, some enjoyment with it, some, you know, some money, and you not have to be on the court, you know, 40, 50, 60 hours a week. And I still hang on to that because I feel like I've adapted my tennis coaching that way. I still love teaching tennis, but you know, you can get very monotoned out there and go through the motions if you are teaching too much. And so, you know, yes, the pay is great, and it's hard for young coaches to, you know, say no to that when, you know, I got 40 hours a week and making pretty good money here. So I think you've got to put in your time and do that. But outside of that is really learn the skills off the court. You know, whether you'd want to be a high school coach, a college coach, a head pro, a tennis director, rackets director, you got to learn those skills. I really help out a lot of young coaches right now getting into different certifications. Pickleball has taken off, helping coaches. I've been teaching coaches all week how to play pickleball a little bit more and get some of that education out there. But learning the ropes of, you know, how do you run a pro shop? How do you schedule, you know, your coaches, and how does that work? And, you know, how to be dressed professionally and not just look like, you know, the tennis guy out there that got, you know, nice shoes, but got holes in their shorts, you know, just, you know, acting the part, acting professional, you know, learning, you know, equipment, you know, maintenance of courts, clay courts, you know, all those little things that off the court that might not mean much, but if you move your way up if you want to be a tennis director or a rackets director, you need to know those things. And I feel like a lot of people learn that when they do get that role, instead of having that education from when you're just a tennis professional up into a head pro. And I think a lot of courses don't teach that enough. And it's good to get certified and get connected with, you know, places like PTR and USPTA, which are organizations to help, you know, young tennis professionals. But, you know, to really learn some of those outside things and seek that out off tennis directors. They might not always teach you, but to ask those questions, I think, would be, you know, a big help to young professionals that want to be in that industry.
So through your tennis career, both, you know, playing and coaching, you know, and as I open up this podcast, you know, what are your virtues and what, how do you explore them and how you lead your life? And we've alluded to a lot of that with some mentors and people that you've mentored and the great opportunities that tennis has afforded you. Is there anything looking back in your either coaching or playing career, I don't know, that you may have done differently, or you felt like, I missed the mark there, and I could teach someone else not to do that, or something to that effect?
Yeah. When I was younger, I only played, I think, a year and a half of college. Definitely wish I'd known more in high school and had that support of that education into how do you get into an American college and have the experience that I saw when I coached Pepperdine. That experience and that would be definitely one up there. But at the same time, I think it takes a very special individual to be a college athlete, mm-hmm. and, you know, to keep up with the pressures of schooling. You know, you and me are very open that we have dyslexia, and we, you know, sometimes that's tougher for us than others. You know, you managed to get through, but it took you a little while. And so it definitely, to have those pressures is not for everyone. So I don't always say you have to go to college before you turn pro, but it's definitely a great stepping stone, you know, to get into the pros. You know, if you're good enough, you get most things paid for, your education paid for, you get great experience, world-class tennis. You know, so I definitely regret that. And now all the education I know around what types of tennis tournaments in the professional tour to go play, I would have gotten out of Australia. I mean, we were pretty good tennis country for a long time, still are. And I would have gone probably, you know, South America more, Europe or somewhere to try and get a little further along on the tour. So I definitely have some of those regrets that if I knew about it a little bit more, I think I would have gone that way. But coaching wise, I really don't have any regrets. I've taught at every level, every type of different place you can think of. I've done most of it, which I think is unique. Someone said to me the other day, I'm like a Swiss Army knife when it comes to, you know, being a tennis coach. Is kind of, I've done it all. I've been all over the place a little bit, based in LA for a long time, but I did that on purpose because I wanted to get to know the world of tennis in so many different ways than just being a college coach or being a high school coach or a country club coach. I wanted to have all the tools.
Yeah, so you've certainly had a huge array of experiences, from high school to college to pros to beginners to the little ones to, ladies tennis to men's tennis. You have seen so much of it. Do you still have, if you have any dreams still with tennis or that you would like to still fulfill, what would some of they be?
I just kind of continue on the path I have been doing. I love running events and tournaments and things like that because I love packing. There's nothing worse than seeing a beautiful tennis facility and there's only like two people out there playing on tennis court when there's 10 courts out there. So I love packing arenas and places of where people are enjoying tennis, whether they're watching it, whether they're playing in it, whether they're doing a bit of both, whether it's for a charity, like whatever it is. I love, the start of setting it up, from getting sponsors to organizing food and tickets and prizes, and organizing the players. And I love doing all that and then seeing the finished product. And, that's a big passion of mine. I didn't know I had, just teaching tennis. And I love doing that. And I want to do more of that. I think it brings community, it brings friendships, new friendships, families can enjoy it together. So I'm seeing that in the pickleball world a lot, like communities are really coming together. Anyone can play it, so I think for so long I was against pickleball and now I've completely embraced it and it's really bringing community back onto tennis courts, whether they're getting converted into pickleball or not. It's brought life back to it. I think COVID has brought life back to it. Unfortunately, they need something like that to bring life back into this sport, but it's definitely, we're seeing a boost again. It's great to see, so I just want to continue, growing all of that, the rackets industry. So it keeps growing. And for a long time, it was stagnant a lot. So that's pretty much all. I just want to continue that journey, maybe do a few more destinational events, some fun places in the world that takes people into a great environment and myself. And so, yeah, that's where I'm at with my tennis world. And, and I love coaching all sorts of people, from older people to young people. So, I don't need to go take on, the next Andre Agassi or anything like that. I just want to help whoever's out there that wants to learn.
Well, I still have, I've savored this one, and it's the one thing that I've wanted to do, and I haven't achieved it yet, but the timing will come. I've been to all Grand Slams except Wimbledon by design. I wanted to leave something. Wimbledon's my favorite tennis tournament by far. The tradition, the British, it's part of our heritage. in terms of, you know, our great grandparents, particularly our great grandmother, Ada, who belonged to the Hurling Hand Club, and just all that old beautiful tradition from England. So I've savored going to that tournament. I think one of the cool things I'd love to do is I'd love to see nothing more than Federer in a final there. I think that would just be the pinnacle, you know. So if we ever get that wish, you know, I don't know how much longer Federer's got in him, because he's certainly had a long, successful, amazing career. That's in there, you know. So that's the wish that I still have for us in just having some a different adventure that I think would bring back a, you know, so things together in a lot of ways of our tennis history in our family.
Yeah, I think it would come full circle. I mean, that was a tournament we watched when we were young, trying to stay up until midnight trying to watch it. You know, and it's like that was the dream to. I was hoping to play there one day, but you know, just to go be in that. I think our dad's gone there, our mum's gone there, but we have not yet. I'm still yet to do the French, so I think that would be an amazing adventure to come full circle in our tennis life, you know, to go see something like that, whether it's Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, you know, whoever, like some of those all-time greats to be on center court watching, that's pretty special.
And I think if I lose 50 or 40 pounds, I think I could get better at pickleball. So I don't have to move as far on that court as I do on a tennis court.
We'll get there.
All right, Chris, any lasting words you'd want to share with our listeners here?
Yeah, I just thanks for having me on and, you know, kind of sharing some history and, you know, bringing our family forward of how we started. And I've continued that with, you know, I got three stepkids and my wife got into it because, you know, her oldest was playing tennis. He was actually one of my students way back in the day in Malibu. And now our whole family plays tennis and, you know, I've been able to continue that journey with my family now. So, you know, it's kind of great to have, you know, your family involved in what you love doing. And, you know, even when our parents come over, we still play tennis with them. I try to coach dad. So do you. It's a little tough, but I just love that, you know, we've had this vehicle to, you know, get us around the world to share what we know about the sport to people. And, you know, we have these great stories that we can tell that all the way how our parents met, you know, growing up. So it's been fun to share some of that.
Well, I've known since, I mean, I'm doing some recollection here, but somewhere around your age of 8, 9, or 10, you said, I want to own a family tennis center, because I remember you used to love Sylvania Waters Tennis Center.
Yeah.
And nothing's been truer. You haven't steered away from that path. And you've, like we've mentioned earlier, been through so many evolutions of different parts of what it takes to be a great tennis player and what it takes to be a great coach. So thanks for sharing your wisdom around tennis. I didn't think we'd go so far into tennis. I haven't spoken about tennis for years. I'd probably try and forget about my short career. But I certainly enjoyed watching you succeed. And I always encouraged you. I said, I got into, you know, personal development, psychology and the spiritual worlds. And I said, just stick with tennis, man. It'll steer you straight. And I think it really has.
Yeah. And you have told me that. And it is weird for an 8, 9-year-old to say, you know, I want to own a family tennis center. Yeah. You know, but we grew up with that. We had a tennis court in our backyard for a brief period. So, you know, we were around that nonstop. And you definitely kept me and pushed me into staying into tennis, which, you know, I've always appreciated, and it has helped me through everything, you know. So it's been a great journey so far, and I'm on to my next chapter in tennis, which I'm looking forward to.
Do you want to give mention to that or hold it for another day?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much time we got, but you know, it's my passion for living in LA, but has leaked into owning a house out in Palm Springs, which I love. It's like my little Disneyland, Wonderland out there, golf and tennis and great weather, at least part of the year. And so I've taken on another rackets director role at Palm Valley Country Club out in Palm Desert. So I'm looking forward to that and the next adventure with that, with pickleball and tennis and running big events. So I'm gearing to do that in the next few weeks. So I'm super excited. I can't wait to get out there and see how it all pans out.
Well, I'm wishing you well on that adventure. It's a, you know, new journey for you and for the family. So
yeah.
All right, Chris. Well, thank you very much and talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.